You're listening to the RBN Energy Blogcast. This is an audio version of RBN's Daily Energy Blog, which is a fun and informative daily commentary on oil, gas, NGL, and renewable markets. Each morning, we cover commodity fundamentals and industry changes to keep you informed of developing trends across the energy landscape.
Wednesday, March 25th, 2026. Turn Me Loose: How Pipeline Capacity Scarcity and Seasonality Have Impacted WCSB Crude Oil Prices, published by Mike Dunn. Crude oil supply from the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin, or WCSB, continues to grow. At times, the regional crude surplus has exceeded outbound pipeline capacity. In today's RBN blog, the third in a series, we'll take a close look at periods of pipeline capacity surplus and scarcity, how these periods correlated with WCSB price discounts relative to U.S. price benchmarks, and examine seasonal price discount patterns. In part one of this series, we discuss the drivers behind the near doubling of WCSB crude oil production from 2010 to 2025, as well as seasonal trends of WCSB production. In part two, we reviewed the major pipeline projects that expanded capacity to move barrels out of the WCSB, how the timing of those projects matched up with supply growth, and current export pipeline capacity. We'll start today by looking at WCSB crude supply relative to export pipeline capacity. You might want to take a look at Figure 1 in today's blog, where we show total combined nameplate capacity for the six pipeline systems that move barrels out of the WCSB, the total amount of available pipeline capacity, and estimated WCSB crude oil supply available for export. Looking at the difference between the two lines over time, we can see that there was little to no spare pipeline capacity in 2018, 19, and off and on between late 2020 and mid-2024. Figure 2 shows how price discounts for WCSB crude oil have correlated with pipeline capacity scarcity. The gray bars show the difference between available pipeline capacity and crude oil supply available for export. In other words, the gray bars show the difference between the blue line and the black line shown in Figure 1. The blue line in Figure 2 shows the average monthly price spread between Western Canadian Select Heavy Oil, or WCS, at Hardisty, Alberta, relative to WTI at Cushing, Oklahoma. While not shown in Figure 2, the price spread between light sweet crude at Edmonton and WTI at Cushing typically moves in step with the WCS-WTI price spread. You'll notice that in 2010 to 2013, WCS prices often saw steep discounts. Even though there was plenty of spare capacity exiting the WCSB, refineries in the U.S. Midwest, or PADD 2, had only minimal competition for those barrels, as there was little capacity to move barrels further south to the U.S. Gulf Coast, or USGC, where they could fetch more competitive pricing. Another factor impacting WCS discounts was that the Midwest's heavy crude oil processing capacity was designed to take less acidic conventional heavy crude oil from Western Canada, but its metallurgy was not well suited to handle the more acidic oil sands bitumen blends driving the growth in WCSB heavy crude oil supply. This has changed over the past 15 or so years as many Midwest heavy oil refineries have improved their equipment metallurgy to handle more acidic heavy crudes. U.S. Gulf Coast heavy oil refiners, on the other hand, were generally designed to better handle crude oil grades that had high total acid numbers. As we discussed in Part 2, the startup of more than 1 million barrels per day of pipeline capacity from Cushing to the USGC in 2014 at last provided substantial connectivity between WCSB heavy crudes and the world's largest heavy crude oil refining market, ushering in a period lasting over 3 years that saw relatively narrow, less volatile WCS price discounts. However, by late 2017, WCSB crude supply available for export often exceeded export pipeline capacity, once again triggering blowouts in the WCS-WTI spread. In late 2018, the government of Alberta announced that it would implement mandated production curtailments, beginning in January 2019. The rationale was that if producers all reduce their output by a small percentage, prices should improve by an even larger percentage so that their revenues, as well as the government's royalty revenues, would be higher. Keep in mind that the province of Alberta owns the mineral rights underlying the vast majority of the land within its borders. The curtailment mandates proved quite effective at mitigating the differential blowouts. Alberta gradually eased the curtailments over time, although differentials did widen out seasonally again in late 2019 as curtailment quotas were relaxed and production surged. Differentials narrowed again in early 2020, initially due to seasonality factors, and later driven by the rapid drop in global oil prices tied to the COVID-19 pandemic and OPEC Plus members failing to agree on quotas. The oil price crash triggered the shut-in of several hundred thousand barrels per day of temporarily uneconomic WCSB crude oil production. Global oil prices improved off the extreme lows seen between mid-March and mid-May 2020 and, as a result, WCSB volumes had largely recovered by the end of 2020, at which time Alberta's curtailment mandates were formally halted. WCSB crude oil supply jumped again in late 2021 in tandem with the October startup of the Enbridge Mainline's Line 3 Replacement Project, or LUR, which boosted the mainline's nameplate capacity by 327,000 barrels per day. This extra capacity was quickly filled up, and by mid-2022, WCSB volumes available for export were once again nearing or exceeding total export pipeline capacity. This continued off and on until May 2024, when the 590,000 barrels per day Trans Mountain Expansion Project, or TMX, began flowing barrels. Since then, WCS-WTI price spreads have been less volatile and, on average, slightly tighter than in past good years. In Part 1, we showed how monthly production in the WCSB can vary by several hundred thousand barrels per day within any given year, with the spring months typically seeing the lowest levels, scheduled maintenance season for most oil sands facilities, and November-December typically seeing the highest levels, very little planned maintenance downtime, new projects ramping up. Figure 3 shows the seasonality of WCS, or Hardisty, WTI, or NYMEX Cushing, price spreads from 2014 to 25. The gray bars show the range of WCS-WTI index prices for each month, and the black line shows the monthly average. On average, these price spreads are tightest in the spring, especially in June at the end of spring when WCSB production has been in its seasonally low period for several weeks already, and widest late in the year when production is typically at its seasonal peak. As you would expect, futures prices for monthly WCS-WTI index contracts also exhibit seasonality. Prior to 2014, WCSB crudes were often highly discounted because of a lack of access to tidewater markets and limited competition for those barrels outside the Midwest. In 2014, the addition of more than 1 million barrels per day of pipeline capacity to move WCSB barrels to the USGC ushered in a three-year period of relatively narrow price differentials. From late 2017 until mid-2024, growing WCSB supply once again resulted in price discounts that were at times quite wide, as export pipeline capacity became scarcer. The TMX startup in 2024 has improved WCSB crude oil price discounts, at least for the time being. As one would expect, there is a clear inverse correlation between the amount of surplus export pipeline capacity and the magnitude of price discounts for WCSB crude oils. Lastly, WCSB crude price discounts follow seasonal trends, typically narrowest in the spring and widest in the fall, due to WCSB production seasonality. In the next blog in this series, we will look at how the end markets for WCSB barrels have evolved over time, as capacity to move more barrels further afield from the mid-continent has expanded. Later in this series, we will look at WCSB crude oil supply growth going forward, and how that compares with the timing and size of pipeline projects being proposed to expand export capacity. In our recent blog, Bring Me to Life, we wrote about Bridger Pipeline LLC and its plans to build a 36-inch diameter pipeline that would connect to the Canadian portion of the Keystone XL pipeline at the Canadian border in Montana and deliver barrels to the crude hub at Guernsey, Wyoming. We recently completed a multi-client study, Roundabout, that examines how evolving Canadian, Bakken, and Rockies production, pipeline logistics, and pricing dynamics are redefining PADD 4's role as a destination and transit corridor to Cushing and the U.S. Gulf Coast. Turn Me Loose was written by Paul Dean and Mike Reno and appears as the second song on side one of Loverboy's eponymous debut studio album. The song is built around a bass riff and features crunchy guitar by Paul Dean and the plaintive vocals of Mike Reno. Released as the first single from the album in February 1981, it went to number 6 on the Billboard Pop Rock Tracks chart and number 35 on the Billboard Hot 100 singles. Personnel on the record were Mike Reno, lead vocals, Paul Dean, guitars, backing vocals, Scott Smith bass, Doug Johnson, keyboards, Matt Frenette, drums, and Nancy Nash and Katie Kassoon, backing vocals. The album, Loverboy, was recorded in 1979-80 at Little Mountain Sound in Vancouver and produced by Bruce Fairbairn. Released in the U.S. in November 1980, it went to number 13 on the Billboard 200 albums chart and has been certified 2X Platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America. Three singles were released from the LP. Loverboy is a Canadian hard rock band formed in Calgary, Alberta, in 1979. After opening shows for major rock acts in Canada, the group was signed to a record deal with Columbia Records Canada in 1979, and released their debut album, Loverboy, in the US in November 1980. They have released 9 studio albums, 4 live albums, 16 compilation albums, and 29 singles and have sold more than 15 million records worldwide. 7 members have passed through the band since its formation. Bassist Scott Smith was presumed dead after a large wave swept him off his boat near San Francisco in November 2000 at 45. His body has never been recovered. Bassist Jim Clench died in November 2010 in Montreal at 61. After a hiatus from 1989 to 1991, Loverboy continues to tour and will be appearing at various venues in the U.S. beginning in June.
Thanks for listening to the RBN Daily Energy Blogcast. For more information on energy market reports, maps, and consulting engagements, please visit us at rbnenergy.com. And thanks for rocking with us.